This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side. And of course, the MGO Blog Roundtable is here. We got Brian Cook from MGO Blog. BC, how you doing?
I'm well.
That is great. I'm glad to hear it. Seth, I'm going to try to bring the edge out of Seth this morning. He's been timid.
He's been respectful.
I'm going to try to bring a little out of Seth this morning. Seth, how are you?
I will find out how I'm doing on Saturday. Everything can wait till Saturday. I don't know what I am. I don't know who I am. I don't know who I'm married to, what my children are. We'll find out Saturday if I deserve to exist on this planet.
And we have Craig Ross in the building. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm concentrating on MSU. I'm not concentrating on my next job at ESPN. I'm strictly thinking about Saturday and not my future employment possibilities.
Yeah, look, man, this is fun. I know we got to talk a little bit about Northwestern, but this is fun. Undefeated Michigan State team. Even if this is the last hurrah from Mel Tucker in East Lansing, he's giving us a spectacular. So who expected for him to be at the last chance you his way to relevance this year? I didn't expect it. I didn't think it would be possible to get 37 transfers and make them coherent and cohesive in the way he has. So I got to give a man credit for fielding a good team this year.
Oh, yeah, I think we all are. I didn't expect Michigan State to be this good. I didn't expect Kenneth Walker to come out and be one of the better running backs in the country. I didn't expect Thorne to be a pretty good quarterback. He might be the second best quarterback in the Big Ten right now. I mean, I think that's at least a plausible rating of him. Mm-hmm. So I didn't expect this at all. I didn't think they could cover up an offensive line that didn't look very good last year or a secondary that looked like a sieve. Last year, I mean, I didn't. So you've got to give Tucker and Michigan State credit. Yeah, doesn't right. mean I like him. Although I don't have any, beef with really Tucker.
I don't have any beef either. As a matter of fact, people say I don't ever say anything good about the Sparties. I think Mel Tucker, pretty good coach. So that's why you should leave, Mel. I mean, this is about the pinnacle at Michigan State. If you look at Michigan State's history, they have once in a generation, they'll rise up. This happens to be a longer window because Michigan has had contributed to that by being down. And so Michigan State hasn't had to cheat to be relevant. They hadn't had to, do extracurriculars off the field, no steroids or any of that to pump them up. They have been legitimately better for a good portion of the Mark D'Antonio era into the here and now, where they've been, 3-3 against Jim Harbaugh. So I'm curious how you guys feel, starting with you, Brian, about Michigan coming off of what you saw from the Wolverines in the victory over Northwestern heading into this game against Michigan State. What's your sort of broad brush view of Michigan heading into this contest?
Well, I mean, they got the two best backs in this game, period. Like, there's no question about that. Like, I've seen Kenneth Walker do some things. Yeah, he can do some things. But Blake Corum's
the best. I didn't even say that. Let me stipulate for the record.
I didn't say it either.
I didn't even say that.
Pro Football Focus said it.
I happen to agree with the comment, but I didn't say it. This is another man saying it. Michigan has the two best backs in this game.
Proceed. I got the two best backs in this game. And if you look at Michigan State, they played Northwestern, right? We know what playing Northwestern's like. They played Rutgers, they played Indiana, they played Western Kentucky, they played Nebraska, and they got outgained by about 1-0 in the second half against Nebraska, and they played the shambles of a Miami team.
Oh, you forgot Youngstown State.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Youngstown State. So
all the cotton candy.
How do you forget about Youngstown State?
So, I mean, this is a Michigan State team that like came out hot. They got some breaks on the schedule. They got really lucky to escape against Nebraska, and now it's about to get turned up, and we're going to see how real they are. And I'm guessing they're somewhat real, but you know, Michigan's favorite on the road here, and I think that's appropriate.
Seth Fisher, how you feeling, man? How you feeling about Michigan heading into this game?
Well, Brian's dead on about the backs. Pro Football Focus has Quorum number one in the country. They've got Hassan Haskins number five in the country. And they've got Walker tied at number 10 with Henderson at Ohio State. So, I mean, there was a little thing going out. Would you have Walker or would you have Michigan's pair? And I'm like, dude, you can give me Michigan's pair and add any other back in the country to Walker. And there's still a strong case to be made that Michigan's got the best two backs there. So like, we're seeing it in the charting. The running backs and then like the tight ends are making this running game functional. Even when the offensive line, I thought Barnhart had kind of a weak game is one of his. So the offensive line's good. They're not great, and I think Michigan State is. You don't get to 7-0 without being good, right? But Michigan is getting good in a lot of places we didn't think they were. Defensive tackles, I'm ready to put stars on those guys. And then we had Turner. I don't even want to believe it, right? Turner had a great game. A great game from a cornerback. What's the one thing we dreamed of before Michigan State was a cornerback having a good game the week before. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's going to stay. But it's hard not to look at Michigan and say this team has gotten leagues better than they were last year and change your expectations. Obviously, like people were saying 7-5 or 8-4. I was saying 8-4. And I mean, they were already at 7. So unless you think we're going to lose out, start to talk about Michigan like they're a really good team.
Hey, man. And so the point that you just raised about the backs, I think, is worth emphasizing because you watched that game and how many times did those guys win a battle against a free defender and not a free defender by design. I mean, some plays, yeah, that's the back's man and you got to beat him. But in this game, there are a number of occasions where, I mean, a lineman just got beat or a block got missed. And here are the backs, be it Blake Corum or Hassan Haskins, they made the play anyway. And they've been doing that routinely. And this was maybe to me, the most vivid example of that game where both of them did it multiple times in that contest.
Yeah, I mean, the 3rd and 4 run where Corum gets a guy right to him at the line of scrimmage and just puts him in the ground. Like, that was one of the key plays in this game, right? Because you're looking at another red zone trip where you're maybe going to get a field goal and it doesn't feel real good. And then all of a sudden they're at the one and they're hurrying up because Corum just dusted a second guy on that play. And that's the second. There's two times in that game where he did that. He made a guy miss right at the line of scrimmage and then the safety ate dirt too. So that kind of ability is special. And then, I mean, we see from Haskins, there was a great sideline shot of Pat Fitzgerald after they dialed up the exact right blitz. And Haskins just ran through an arm tackle and they were like hopping up and down. They were so angry. So to have that combination is great. And honestly, like, you know, the offensive line isn't like completely mauling people, but, you know, I saw Michigan State's offensive line get the line of scrimmage reset on them over and over again against Nebraska. And that didn't happen when Michigan played Nebraska. So, you know, as long as we don't have a recurrence of the second half against Rutgers, I feel like Michigan should be in good shape in this game, as long as they get adequate quarterback play. And that's kind of the open question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. One thing I want to add to what Brian just said, the guys they were dodging at the line of scrimmage were safeties as well. So Nebraska was bringing their safeties down and
Northwestern.
Yeah. They're both at NU's. Northwestern was bringing their safeties down, and we saw that happen against Rutgers as well, because they're, you know, Michigan wasn't going to beat them over the top. And McNamara's deep passing in this game was not remotely on target. Like, normally, we've seen him, like, okay, he throws it a little far, he throws it a little short. Nebraska, I thought there might have been some wind catching it. It's always been explainable. This time, he was putting them where the cornerback had a better shot at it than the receiver, which is was really concerning to me because it's a regression from what McNamara has been before. And, like, that's the way to loosen those things up. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with a safety at the line of scrimmage every play.
Yeah, there were two plays when Michigan had one-on-one coverage and the ball just needed to be thrown into an area where the wide receiver could run it, chase it down. And instead, the ball was thrown back towards the defensive back. And that didn't need to be a perfect throw. It just needed to be a ball where the receiver could chase it. And that was disappointing in this game.
Yeah, look, he's been, as far as downfield accuracy, fair to say, inconsistent at best. That is not a strong suit. And while there has been some progress in some games, I think it's been an issue in almost every game, not to the point where it overrides all the good that he's done, because he's obviously really good short and intermediate. You know, you talk about an offense that didn't have, I mean, there's a dearth of established leadership on this team, and that becomes even greater with Ronnie Bell out, right? So you like that he's an established leader on the team. He takes care of the football. These are security. This is a security blanket for the staff. But there's this other aspect of the offense that's been capped a bit. And so that's why I'll ask you guys the question again. Like I asked that in week one when we first saw a little bit of JJ and said, hey, can they incorporate that on a regular basis in a complimentary way? That was in reference to him as a runner. Well, complimentary isn't just, that's not just his legs. I mean, he can have a complimentary piece with his arm too. So how about seeing him 3-4 plays at a time? How about seeing him a series here, a series there? What about that?
Well, I mean, I think it's more viable than when you asked earlier in there, just because McNamara struggled. But the way these things work out is that it's going to be McNamara unless Michigan has 10 points and they're down by like 10 to Michigan State in the third quarter. And then they're going to try it to whatever they can. Honestly, at this point, I'm ready for red zone quarterback JJ McCarthy, because how many times do they throw in the red zone? And what do they throw? They throw like one fade every once in a while, and everything else is on the ground. So you might as well just go belldozer with it and option off some guys, or use McCarthy as a runner, because we've seen him break tackles. He's not just getting out there and he's sliding, right? He's actually a runner. So even if there's not a role for him outside the 20s, man, Michigan has red zone struggles and they don't throw the ball in the red zone. So let's go with the running quarterback.
I got to believe they've been setting something up, though, right? I got to believe that he, the opportunity to throw more between the 20s is in the playbook. And, you know, now is as good a time as any if you're going to have him just throwing it out there anecdotally, or arbitrarily a random number, to say you're going to have 5 or 6 deep shots a game. Might not have a couple of those be attempted by JJ. And that is just because it's a deep shot call doesn't mean you throw a deep shot. We saw one last week that shouldn't have been thrown deep. You should have taken the check down. So I'm saying that, recognizing that just because you call that doesn't mean he's going to throw it deep, but certainly would like for him to have an opportunity or two in that regard, Craig.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, I agree most with Brian on this, is that the place where you would like to see JJ at this juncture would be in the red zone, because Michigan this last week in particular was pretty bad in the red zone at times, at least on 2 drives. And you get a quarterback who can run in the equation, it makes it much more difficult as the field shrinks and gives you an extra alternative down in the red zone that they don't really have with McNamara, and where you're not really throwing it into the end zone anyway too much in that situation. It seems to me that's the place where perhaps you can work him in a little more. Now we haven't seen much of his long passing. He did throw a deep out in this game that was really good. He threw another one that was terrible.
Who are you talking about? JJ.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't had a lot of opportunities, yeah. But the couple of long passes we've seen have been pretty damn memorable there, Craig. Well, and accurate, too.
Well, there were 2, and one he had the receiver open and he biffed it, and another one he threw a long out to his left.
What's biffed?
He threw it into the ground. And that was
so you guys are talking about different stuff. Sam's talking about the deep shots to Baldwin, and you're talking about the deep outs against Northwestern.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm talking about the Northwestern game. And so he had a deep out that was really good. He had a deep out that was not so good. And then he made that throw that was dangerous as hell, but put it on the money after he scrambled around and threw the ball back across his body and to
the guy who was open originally. That's the thing. I don't want to sit around for we're nowhere near ready to sit around for a game with McCarthy. The first game I ever went to at Michigan State was 1999, and Michigan was doing that. They were trying a quarter with Henson, a quarter with Brady, and then see who wins. Yeah. And they fell into a big hole because Henson just got completely overwhelmed in that stadium at that time and had a terrible first half. And they went with Tom Brady and almost came back. I don't want to be that team again, right?
Man, this is not the same thing.
No. I'm sure it isn't. I'm sure it isn't. But McNamara is going to get you in the right call. I'm comfortable with him when it's third and five and they spread it out five wide. He's going to find the spot and he's going to get the ball there. And that is a thing that this offense thrives with because they don't want to move the ball down the field and they want to run. Their read option game is terrible, but I think that they're going towards more power, so that's becoming less of a problem. And then McCarthy's got to be – you're on a team, right? I'm so sick of hearing, okay, what's going to happen with the team or how is McNamara going to feel if McCarthy gets to have another long bomb? You're on a team with each other. So show him one look, show him another look, have a package for McCarthy. It's not about, what our feelings are. It's about how awful it would be if you're a defensive coordinator trying to prepare for both these guys at the same time. You got one guy who's going to get you.
That's what I'm thinking about it too.
Yeah.
That's why I say by this point, if you're Kate McNamara, you got to be totally confident that you're the guy. I mean, they're sticking with you. They're riding with you. You're a leader on the team. There's no question what his role is. And so it should be okay. It provided he's ready to, sprinkle in a little more of the complimentary piece, because no one, at least I'm not talking about using him as the replacement, using him as the guy. I'm just talking about expanding the complimentary role that's been established for him.
Absolutely. And they're going to freak out when he starts running because he's a danger. And because the running backs, when you give them that kind of space, because now you have to defend the quarterback as well, now you're increasing space for the running backs and you're breaking bigger plays. That is a very dangerous offense. And if you're coming out, they've only seen him running so far. So then you come out and then he throws the ball. With the way the safety's been playing against us, that is how you access some levels of offense that we have not seen yet out of this team. I think that kind of offense, if they're approaching it correctly and they've got a lot of things prepared, I don't think that they spent very much of the bye week preparing for Northwestern. Honestly, we were running our vanilla stuff and the things that we were there was really barely anything new. It just looked like they practiced their power, which is exactly what I wanted them to be doing against Northwestern. So I think there's going to be some cool stuff. I think that we're going to see them stretch their legs a little bit here, and Michigan State's a weird defense. They like to sit back, right? They want to keep everything in front of them. So they're going to be tough to crack, which may play back into the McNamara thing again too. But if you want to crack them, McCarthy's your guy right now.
I have a question for you and Brian. Is it, we'd been sort of a split zone team over most of the year. I don't know if that's a fair characterization, but it seemed like the primary running play was split zone, and that pretty much evaporated this week. I mean, maybe one or two split zones, and all of a sudden they were in power, pin and pull. I mean, is that right? I mean, if it is, is that a way that you see Michigan is going as being more efficacious for this particular offense?
Well, I think having a mix is good, right? So Michigan has a lot of stuff that kind of looks like the split zone stuff, but we saw some pin and pull in the last game, which we haven't seen in a long time. And I think that's a really good way to get outside, especially when it's not such a staple that people are sitting on it. And then power stuff. I mean, these guys are moving the opposition. So to me, that's a good thing to have in your toolkit if you have a bunch of maulers. What Michigan does, Keegan's a mauler, Zinter's a mauler, Stuber's a mauler. Most of the guys on this line look like guys who will be really good at power. And I'm a little surprised that they haven't explored that a little bit more.
Yeah. And they were running that in this last game. As I was watching it live, thought I saw some spit zone. Went and watched back, look back at the tape first with Devin and then with Jack. And man, they were running like a duo sort of kick play. Yeah, it looks a lot like a.
That's the stuff that went off the front side, right? Mm-hmm. It looks like split zone, and then it's just, you know, Haskins or Corum traipsing into the end zone from 5 yards out because the linebackers are biting on the split flow, and then they just kill one of the defensive tackles, and then it's like, all right, now we go in.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, the reason why they fell into split zone in the first place makes sense, because I'm charting our defense, right? And then I watched Northwestern try to run some of the same plays we run, and David Ojabo just absolutely crumples the tight end when he's coming across, and then there's no room to run. And you don't see that with Eric All. And I'm like, do I really need to keep on giving him a plus one every single time he goes across the formation, then kicks a guy out and creates some space? And I'm like, yes, I do. That's a really good play. And because Michigan's so good at that split flow action is something that they want to be part of their offense. I think that you can get that to be part of your offense with power just as well. And then you're not dealing with the fact that the ends are going to be crashing on the backside all the time because we can't run zone read. It's not our fit. And that was the whole mess with McNamara earlier this year. That, like, it's just not a fit with him, because there's a way to defeat that that's very simple. And all of our ways of trying to fight back against it, we had one this time, but then they delivered safeties to the hole. And that kind of ended that one, too. So, I mean, power is something you can run no matter what the front. So they can get to the line and see, okay, this guy's here, this guy's here, this guy's here, and then they change up who's getting pulled. And that makes it a lot more effective than split zone, where you're kind of trapped into a couple different holes that you want to run to.
So here's the deal. This game, as I said, to start things out, is a bit interesting for Michigan State. Sure, they want to win. Sure, they want to win. But I'm sure they all realize that if they do, or even if the game is close, they're probably going to lose their coach. I mean, because who stays at Michigan State if they have a choice to go someplace better, right? No one. Like, if LSU comes from Mel Tucker, he's leaving, period. I'm sure that he is telling his agent, get me that job. Because what did he say when they asked him this week?
Well, Craig? It was a non-denial denial. Yes. He said he wasn't focused on any. He was focused on Michigan. He didn't. That's all he said. He was focused on Michigan. So he didn't really deny his interest in being in other places. What he said was, I'm interested in the Michigan game. Well, of course he's interested in the Michigan game. He should be. And but yeah, I mean, the noise in Spartyville that I'm hearing is that they'll match whatever LSU does. And you know, well, we'll see. I mean, LSU has a lot of money. Obviously, they just gave away $17 million to a guy that, as Brian says, sounds like a rolling gravel truck. And
think about it, Mel. I mean, you're basically, Michigan State broke the bank to get you what they have here right now is that maybe they can scrounge a few more pennies to give you a little more money. But even if the money's the same, even if the money is equal, which it won't be, is LSU and Michigan State. LSU and Michigan State, these are not the same. One is a blue blood that's in a talent hotbed, and you are a second-class citizen in your own state. You go there if you're, man, I'm trying to help you out, Mel. It doesn't get any better than this. We just saw Mark D'Antonio. His run coincided with Michigan's decline. Michigan fell asleep at the wheel a little bit from a leadership perspective. Then they started coming back, and the row is tougher to hold. Are you going to be able to get 37 transfers every year and make it be a team like this? Is that really sustainable, Mel? Go get that check, man. Go get that check. I'm trying to, this is me saying something good to the Sparties. All right, this some good to a Sparty. Am I not helping Mel out right now?
You are trying to be nice.
I'm trying to be nice to Mel. I mean, think about this, Mel. Look at how they did Blackwell, man. Look how they did Blackwell. Blackwell was their guy for a time. Blackwell couldn't do any wrong. And when Mark D'Antonio got caught out there cheating, that's unbeknownst to them, they pinned it all on Blackwell. Blackwell even put some pictures out there. And what did Mark D'Antonio say? Say, what me? What me? Blackwell gets fired, gets escorted out. Mark D'Antonio has an office right next to yours, probably. He's somewhere in the Caledera Center. Why is Mark D'Antonio still around? Like, what role does he? See, you don't have to deal with that when you go down to LSU, man. You don't have to deal with that.
Next question.
Come on. It could just be your show. And if worse comes to worse, think about this. So Ed O just got fired, right? Essentially, Ed Orgeron doesn't care. $17 million, guys. Ed Orgeron is sitting up in practice drinking Mai Tais, Ira. He's bringing women to practice. That's what he's doing at LSU right now. So, Mel, even when it goes bad at LSU. I thought
they were practicing this week.
Yeah, even when it goes bad, it's good at LSU. This is me looking out for you, brother. I mean, think about the possibilities. Doesn't get any better than this. The here and now is as good as it gets for Michigan State. Because, I mean, think about how Mark D'Antonio did what he did. Michigan had to be down for that. Had to be. Can you think of another era in Michigan State football where Michigan State was up when Michigan was up without doing steroids? Think about it.
And post Southern football integration.
Yeah, and post being the only program to bring black players up. Can anyone help me out, Craig? You've been around for a while. Help me out. I'm trying to think of that era.
I don't think it exists.
I don't think it exists either. Mel, gotta go, Mel. I know some agents. I got some agents on speed dial can help you out. Can do a little back channel for you. You want to go to LSU? LSU, behind the scenes, sounds like they really want you to. The fans maybe not aren't on board with it. They want Jimbo Fisher. They aren't getting Jimbo. I know this recruit, big time guy. His dad went to Jimbo and said, Jimbo, you going to LSU? He said, you see how much money A&M is paying me? You think I'm going to leave this? You think LSU can pay me more than this? They aren't getting Jimbo, Mel. Mel. You got to get that job, Mel. Doesn't get any better than this, Mel. Better take it, Mel. Better work for it. Think about it. You really think you're going to be able to sustain this there? No one stays at Michigan State. No one good. If you're good enough, you leave Michigan State. They're a feeder program for relevant programs. Think about it, at least on the football side. So come on, Mel. I'm trying to help you out, brother. I'm trying to do you a solid. This is not going to be the program that you can take to the promised land. Just has never happened. Just has never happened. So you want to do that? Go to LSU. Because even if it doesn't happen at LSU, $17 million. I just want a commission. Can I get a percentage? Can I get a percentage?
Like a half a percent, Sam.
Come on, man.
You take a half a percent.
I love this week. I love this week. This is a fun week. Are you having fun, Seth?
They want state today. Come on, Seth. They need state today. And believe you me, the Wolverines intend to have
Bob.
Michigan State here this afternoon.
Come on, man. Come on. Let's go. This is going to be so fun. I cannot wait. Mr. Weintraub, I know we got to get to a break. So I said a lot there. I expect to be hearing from Sparties this week. At least when they get mad this time, it's about some things I actually said. We need to get to a break. We back on the other side, sort of handicap the game a little bit. What scares you about Michigan State? What should be the things that concern Michigan the most? We will break those things down. We'll return here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. I do not have the ability to curse this game. It is impossible. It is impossible for me to curse this game. I wish I had the power to influence this game. I really wish it was within my purview to do so.
What someone is saying that you
in the chat segment saying that I could curse the game. Man, I wish I had some influence.
I mean, you didn't say anything there that was like nobody outside of Michigan State thinks Mel Tucker would take the LSU job. Like, you know, you can copy all the money you want to, but you're not going to move Louisiana into Michigan. And Mel Tucker has tried. He's going down there and recruiting Georgia like he's an SEC coach right now, but you can only get so many people to agree to live in East Lansing, Michigan for a time.
Dude, anybody who thinks that Mel Tucker wouldn't drop everything to take the LSU job is not even worth addressing. Right? It's
thank
like,
you.
What do you?
They actually think that they could keep him.
Well, like, are you gonna go argue with Charles Manson now? Like,
yeah, man,
some guy and a stained wife beater eating chicken fingers and typing on the internet. We can like pass with the arguments with that guy.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right, Nate. It's rare form. The whole show will be dedicated to Michigan State's eulogy. If I, because telling you, man, if it's close, if this game is close, Mel Tucker's out of there. He is gone. He just can't get blown out. he gets blown out, I think that might I think that might be a bridge too far.
I mean, the problem for Michigan, I mean, like, you know, they just beat this Indiana team by 5, and this is a shell of Indiana, and Walker couldn't do anything, against Nebraska. I would not be surprised if this like running game they have is just based on their schedule. I wondered, what has Miami done?
Well, that's what I said a couple weeks ago that I took all this crap for. I mean, I tried to mention that maybe some of these running yards were a little empty.
I think that is all fine. I think that if you wanted to be analytical about it, you could be, but this is a rivalry game, and in my world, I have a lot of Smarties around me, and whenever Michigan State's doing good, yep, right, talk. If they win this game, then I'm going to have to hear about a Ohio State versus Michigan State battle for the Big Ten East. Like, I don't want to live through that. Here's what happens when Michigan State loses this game in my world.
Silence. Right. That's mine.
That is what I want.
I hear you. I guess to me, you know, any of the sniping from anything I may have said, I don't feel any worse based on that. I mean, if they lose the game, that sucks. It doesn't suck more that I got to hear. I'm going to hear a Sparty smack talk anyway. Mm. Even if I said nothing, I want to hear from them. So,
well, except if Michigan wins, then you're not. I'm with Seth. I mean, then it tends to get quiet in my experience.
So. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the things that Michigan State does or has that concern you. So what do you think Michigan is most nervous about? What challenges do you think the Spartans will present? Starting with you, Mr. Cook.
Well, they've run a lot of flea flickers this year, so you got to watch out for that. You know, I think given what happened last year, everybody's going to be pretty worried about the cornerback matchup against those receivers, because last year, what was their offense? It was just chuck it downfield to a guy running a straight line and see if that works. I'm relatively less concerned about Jaden Reed because of Dax Hill, but you know, we've seen some issues with Michigan's corners even this year, getting real handsy in situations where they didn't need to be. So I think Thorne's done pretty well. He's got a decent deep ball, and this is going to be something that Michigan State tests, I think, early. And it's got to be different than last year when they were panicking and grabbing everything, and then they were getting beat even when they were doing that. So, you know, that's something that really kind of leaps out to me. And then, is Michigan going to be able to run the ball? Because, you know, Michigan State has some players, and Michigan, you know, I think Wisconsin is kind of an outlier, but, you know, Rutgers was not a great game. And I'm confident that Michigan's going to be able to run the ball at least somewhat, but are they going to be able to move the ball consistently on the ground and not put too much on the quarterback?
Seth?
Yeah, State's got a pretty good pass rusher. We have not really seen that yet. They got Beasley out there. They got Slade at defensive tackle. He's going to be a problem. He's been a problem for us in the past. And as Brian mentioned, you know, Peyton Thorne throwing to Jalen Naylor. You know, we saw DJ Turner have a great game. He was not having a great game against the two receivers that we were worried about from Northwestern. One of them got hurt, and the other one was being taken care of by Dax mostly. So, you know, Turner had a good game against a guy who I don't think anyone really feared. And Naylor is a guy who, I mean, he has speed, and he's been a big part of their downfield passing game. But their downfield passing game has, you know, they got Nebraska with it a couple times, and that's really it against good teams. Their running game has really been, and especially early in the season, like they faced some teams that just were not defending the edge. So it's going to be whether Michigan can pull themselves out of this funk where their offense doesn't really make total sense, doesn't really fit their personnel, and actually start using some of the weapons they have the way that need to be used. This is a Gattis game for me. Like, can he fix a lot of the issues he's had? Can Michigan have something they can hang their hat on again? Can Michigan run power against these guys and maybe explore some of the weak points that Michigan State has? I think on paper, Michigan's a better team. I think Michigan State certainly has an ability to do exactly what they did last year, was chuck it up and have DJ Turner and Jamon Green and Vincent Gray just get out-athleted by some of the receivers they have.
Yeah, I guess I'm more with Brian on this, because I'm curious what aspects of the offense do you think are most unrealized? Because I look back at the last three games in succession and can count at least two touchdowns left on the field in each game, receivers running open in the secondary in each game. So what are we, what do we see missing the most? What do we see is the limiting factor offensively for Michigan that, that concerns you in this game to the extent that you're talking about? I guess I need to need you to enlighten me. Okay.
Michigan does not run. Michigan does not throw mid-range. You know, we throw bombs and we throw underneath, but we do not throw mid-range. Michigan State, if they have a weakness, especially the way they're going to have to bend their defense against Michigan, is in the mid-range. I think that that's not really McNamara's game. He doesn't have a very strong arm. He does not like to throw anywhere. There could be a possible interception. I think that a lot of times when he misses somebody, it's like the guy peeling off. It's the underneath of the Mills. That's something that Michigan does not really attack well, except for outside. So
Mills is a post and a dig, and if the safety sticks up on the dig, then you hit the post.
Right.
Let's not get too jargony.
Sorry. But yeah, they're not hitting the digs, right? Michigan doesn't throw them. And that's one of the spots where Michigan State has been weak this year because of the way they play defense. So that's...
The distinction, and I do believe this is a distinction, I do believe there is a difference, is it that they aren't calling digs or they aren't throwing digs.
Well, they aren't throwing digs.
Yeah,
they are throwing digs. Yeah. And so
that's the kind of thing.
I guess I'm more with Brian. To me, this is a quarterback. This is a quarterback. What level of quarterback play will we see in this game? Which quarterback will be superior in this game is really what it boils down to me, Craig.
Well, the thing about not throwing digs over the middle makes a lot of sense when you have this running game, mm-hmm. right? Because, take your shots downfield and then run the ball, and we have one interception for the year, right? And that's probably a big reason. So
on a dig,
you just got. Well, that wasn't a dig. That was a
tight end. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a stick route. But the thing is that you just need to hit some of the deep shots, and that was going great up until it stopped going great, and you just got to get back there. Anyway, Craig.
Yeah, our boy Ed Feng had Dr. Bob Stoll on his podcast this week, and he's iconic in the sports stats gambling world. And he talked a bit about Michigan State, and his exact word was he's wary of Michigan State. And this wariness, and this is a wariness in terms of evaluation, because he says their success rate is very low, 89th in the country on offense. But their explosiveness is incredibly high. And so what Michigan State has been able to do is just break a lot of big plays this year, even though, from a success point of view, it hasn't been very good. And so the question on defense for Michigan will be, can they limit big plays? Mm-hmm. And if they limit big plays, then Michigan has a chance. On offense, to me, it just comes down to, State will probably bring a safety down into the run game routinely, and can we make them pay for that? And that's going to be really on the quarterback's head. Can the quarterback hit, the man coverage case that he didn't hit this week against Northwestern, because Northwestern was bringing that safety down and often left a guy downfield with man coverage.
So two questions. What do we think about Michigan State's offensive line? Because to me, I give them the advantage, their receivers versus Michigan's corners. That is not meant as a disparagement to say Michigan's guys can't do it. Just based on what we've seen from both sides, I think they have the advantage here. You can mitigate that advantage with pressure. We've seen Aiden Hutchinson get pressure in every single game. But I think what has been impressive about this team is we've seen the pressure come from different places in different games from guys other than Aiden Hutchinson. So what do we think about Michigan State's offensive line, and where does Panasuk rank in the pantheon of dirty Michigan State players?
He's up there.
he's probably behind his brother.
I mean,
no, his brother was not as bad as he. Jacob was the worst one.
He's the worst. Okay.
I mean, their offensive line had so far to go that I kind of feel like it's hard to get that kind of improvement in 1 year. And if you watch their games against teams that have sort of a pulse on defense, they get their OL, the line of scrimmage reset a lot. So I kind of feel that they're a bit of a paper tiger on the OL, and that, I mean, they're not going to block Hutchinson. Nobody blocks Hutchinson. They might block him by dedicating two guys to him, but given what we've seen from Michigan's defensive tackles, I feel like that should be a spot where Michigan is able to get to Walker at or near the line of scrimmage, and then maybe Walker can make something out of it.
Something interesting I thought was that Michigan State took last year's roster with their offensive line and added 15 pounds to everybody. I'm not exactly sure if the weights being reported are true. You gotta ask the question, which offensive line are you talking about? Because they roll out two offensive lines. You know, they got Matt Allen out there and J.D. Duplain and Jared Horst and Kevin Jarvis and A.J. Curry, and then they'll switch it up. They'll have Matt Carrick and Blake Boyder and Nick Samak at center and Luke Campbell at tackle. Like, they've been running out almost two entire offensive lines. I think the only guy they keep out there is Horst, which is the transfer they got. So there's some weakness there that I think Michigan's tackles are much better than we thought they were. That was probably a concern going in the season, and I think that's why you're seeing that dichotomy between big plays and nothing. Because Michigan State, their offensive line is not going to hold up for that. Now, you don't need to hold up. Northwestern was throwing a bunch of screens and chucking them downfield too, and that's what Michigan State wants to do as well. It doesn't take that long to get a fade out. The problem is a fade's only a 50-50 call, but if their receivers are continually dusting our cornerbacks, those are going to be effective plays. That was their whole strategy last year. That is how they built their team this year, and you know, they're going to hit some of them, and that's tough. They're going to, if you get into a rock fight with them and they get to hit a couple of those, that's troublesome.
What stands out to me is, Brian talked about the Nebraska game, and I thought a factor in that contest, and I talked about it with the guys when we were looking back at that crack play. You remember the crack play that Mike Morris just blew up?
Yeah,
Michigan
yeah.
State got blown up on that play by Nebraska, and watched a little more of it, and they hit Peyton Thorne in the first half of that game, and it seemed like that was a factor. Seemed like that was a factor in the ineffectiveness in the second half of that game, which is why I asked a question about that offensive line. I think if they get to him, and they're probably saying the same thing about Cade McNamara, but I think if they get to him, they can really, really alter this game from the quarterback perspective if what happened in that game is an indicator of what's to come or what could have happened in this one.
Of course, that was the talk about Michigan in the second half of the Rutgers game, too.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely, I acknowledge.
I mean,
that.
There's no question that pressuring a quarterback isn't only effective on the play where he's pressured, but the next play too.
All right, I think glaring in those games is it didn't just disrupt both guys. Both guys are basically almost catatonic. I mean, they just could do nothing past that point. So who has the better odds of keeping the pressure off of their quarterback in this game, I think is a very, very significant deal because of the enormity of how it impacted both quarterbacks in those two games.
No one's going to stand behind A.J.R. Curry or Luke Campbell. They're not going to do that. Michigan State is not going to give Michigan time for Aiden Hutchinson to arrive. There's going to be like a half second where Aiden Hutchinson is whipping a tackle. There's going to be a half second when he's getting held, and then the ball's going to be out. Like, that is how their offense is going to operate. And like that's smart for them. There's no reason to have your guys sit back there. Michigan's been fortunate this year not to really face, I think, anyone like really dangerous as an edge rusher, and Beasley's going to be different in that regard. So, I mean, that's a matchup that we're waiting to see. Like, Stuber looked a little hurt, maybe, and like that could be an issue for us. Like I said, Michigan's going to have some things schemed up in this game because they've not been out scheming teams at all on offense.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly.
You think they out-schemed Northwestern?
Absolutely.
There was no scheme. In that game.
I think in the Wisconsin game, in the Nebraska game,
they did show up for Wisconsin. They did show up. I apologize. They showed up for Wisconsin.
They schemed up so many open opportunities for the receivers. And in this one, I wonder how different are we talking about this game if even one of the open opportunities down the field is.
Yeah.
I think we're talking about it different.
Yeah, and So one thing about the Michigan State sack numbers, which are really impressive, is that they have faced a ton of throws. So there's like 48 in one game, 60 in another game. So like on a per snap basis, they're much more mortal than 26 sacks in seven games makes them sound like. It's just they face a ton of
Western
throws.
Western Kentucky only throws the ball, for example.
Right. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting. So let's get to the nitty gritty, because I want you guys to have an opportunity to explain yourselves, not confine you to 10 seconds to talk about your pick. But let's get right to it, guys. And so we'll start with you, Craig. How do you see this game? Why did you come in with a Cleveland Browns hat today? I thought you weren't even a Browns fan
anymore. More of a Lions fan, but I actually went to Cleveland last week on a whim. My wife actually said, hey, let's go to the Browns game. And I said, what? And so we went in and I bought, it was cold as hell in that stadium. It's windy on the lake. And so I brought I bought a Browns hat. So I'm sort of reviving my Browns fandom, although I'm still more of a Lions fan.
You came to the Lions by choice. What are you doing?
Your winner and your score, Craig Ross.
Yeah, you know, my numbers have Michigan State winning this game. My small algorithm, and I think so does Dr. Bob. But Dr. Bob is, quote, wary of Michigan State, and I'm very wary of Michigan State. I don't know what their numbers mean exactly. I really don't know, but I'm calling it Michigan 24, Michigan State 20. The weather, I don't know if it's going to rain or not. You know, if it's wet, I think I might like Michigan's chances a little more than not, but. My eye instinct is Michigan wins this game by 3 to 4 points.
And that's still a win for you, Mel. If you lose by three, you still win. You can still get out of Michigan State with that. I'm just saying. All right. Brian Cook, win and score.
I mean, to me, this is a hard game to predict because you just don't know what you're going to get out of Cade McNamara. Because if he's hitting deep shots like he did early in the game, then Michigan's going to win this game by 2 touchdowns. If he's hitting deep shots like he did in the last game, Michigan's going to lose. So... Mm-hmm. I think a lot really hinges on a number of throws that are going to be there for McNamara and can he actually hit them? You know, I guess my median expectation is that Michigan is going to hit the spread and win narrowly, but I think that this could go a lot of different ways because I don't think Michigan's just going to be able to overpower Michigan State on the ground. And I don't think Michigan State's going to be able to do the same. So it's going to come down to who gets the quarterback. I think Michigan has an edge there just because Hutchinson's the best player in the country, maybe. And whether Michigan's quarterback can be as steady when given opportunities as Peyton Thorne. So a lot of variability in this game. Pretty uncomfortable.
So you can't make a pick?
I picked Michigan by three. But
okay, gotcha. All right. Seth, I came to you last because I know you're the most nervous about making a pick, man.
Oh, yeah, I'm nervous. I'm going 15-14. Michigan with 5 field goals, Michigan State with 2 long touchdowns. I sort of disagree with Brian. I think that Michigan's going to have some things planned, maybe with JJ, maybe just with some interesting things with the power run game.
I didn't say that. You said that wasn't going to happen.
No, I said it hasn't happened. It hasn't been happening lately.
I didn't say that wasn't going to happen.
Michigan's going to turn it around. I think they overlooked Northwestern. I think that they are not overlooking this team. I think that they're going to have a power run game that's going to attack some of the things that Michigan State's not good at. They're going to kind of nerf some of the things that Michigan State's good at. They're going to move the ball down the field slowly. They're going to get some calls against them. And then they're just not going to be able to put it in the end zone. And it's going to be frustrating because it's going to feel like Michigan's the much better team. But it reminds me a lot of that 2012 game where, like, Michigan's better. Michigan State just makes a couple plays. It's really close. And then we have to make that that field goal at the end. That's kind of how I feel about this game. 15-14
Michigan.
Yep.
All right. Hey, I got listen. Here's the thing, Seth. Even if you had declined to make a pick, and you're totally quiet about this game, you're gonna hear from the Sparties anyway. You work for MGO Blog. They're coming for you, man. No matter what, so you might as well enjoy yourself.
I don't need to work for MGO Blog. They're in my family, man. Like,
there you go.
I have a lot of siblings. Let's put it this way: I have a lot of siblings and siblings-in-law who were big Michigan fans until they were about 17 years old.
There you go, Seth. There you go, man. Finally, we pulled it out of him, Craig. It took us the whole show, but we got a shot from Seth Fisher and a brilliant one at that. I love it, Seth. Love it, love it, love it. All right, folks, I love you guys. It is always fun, and hopefully when we come back next week, it'll be a fun and festive atmosphere and mood. We'll be here regardless, though, even if it's not. Be here to dissect it. MGO Blog Roundtable here on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. Ira, you and I are back tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider. Of course, we're going to be getting it in even harder. You thought we went hard today. Ira said at the beginning of the week, he said, Sam, I want you to ramp it up. So I want you to ramp it up.
You're at about 75% today,
Sam. Don't want you to really go hard as Sparty today. Just, you know.
Today was about 75%, your biggest day yet.
Wait, so we get to go all the way in starting tomorrow,
about
right?
95% tomorrow, then 100% on Saturday.
All right. Well, there you go. Looking forward to it. Be sure to join us tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider. Sports Talk 1050, WTKA The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Because they grew up.